We've got Nicola, Adam, Joanne, and Wendy on the line. And
Hi,
David.
guys.
Yeah.
Hello. Nice to see you, David, or both of you.
Yeah, the two Davids. So, where do we want to
Morning.
start this morning?
Well, I've been thinking about that as I've been driving over. I think there's probably three main things. One is to talk about what I've been doing as I've been driving around, looking at blood.
Yes.
The second thing is,
Occasionally getting some sleep.
no, sleep's been good. Sleep's important. The second thing is the directional thing we need to go as far as the live blood checks are concerned. And I'm going to write a bit more about that. We could drop in on the last Substack I wrote
Yeah.
yesterday,
Yeah, I've got that open somewhere.
which is quite fun. And then the last thing was that just looking at some of the therapeutic options
Yeah.
that are available and, potentially how we can muscle test for those.
Interesting. Yesterday afternoon, I had my most damaged client at the moment. She tested up to six of the capsules of sodium citrate a day.
Right. Okay. That's interesting. So that would
I
be.
didn't do it because I don't have any, but I thought I'd discuss, who
Haven't
would
I
know
brought
any.
you in?
Oh, there's like 10 in there, so that would have lasted
I'll bring some
a.
more. I've
And
got I yeah, I've got plenty.
at that dose, maybe powder is better because she already takes her zeolite and Cardio-X and, stuff.
The palate is going to be more affordable for sure.
So where would you like to start?
Right, where would I like to start? Okay, so what have I been doing? So we're in the first week of February.
In
So
Australia.
in
Last
okay, that's confusing, isn't
day
it?
January for
Last
some.
day January for them. Right. So in the first week in December I went and spent 6 days at Nanango, which is a small country town of 3,500 people, 2.5 hours northwest of Brisbane. It's largely a rural community servicing the farms and other industries. And I saw 42 people there and spent an hour with each one looking at their blood. And if there was time for 15 people, I also looked at their drinking water. 41 of the 42 were unvaccinated. And then I did a couple of days on their blood, and then I presented on the Saturday night. I guess what the most there were two key things. One, everybody's blood looks the same. We're dealing with a systemic problem now. And the other thing was I really didn't have any solutions other than saying, this is not good.
And that's why we've been trying to find solutions that are cheap that people can at least start to integrate, implement some really basic things.
Yeah,
You know,
so.
because, there's a lot of solutions. Well, there's a lot of potential solutions, and everything costs money. So we
Yeah.
need something cheap and easy to get,
We need a population-based approach, something that we can say that, well, this is what something that everybody can do, and it needs to be affordable and needs to be something that can't be closed down or stopped or and needs to be imported. So that was Nanango. And the key features, I guess, with regard to the blood is just this prominence of hydrogel, and I did talk to that on my Substack.
Hey, Jen.
Hey Jen.
Hi.
So I now look at blood in the same way that you do, taking a very small drop, wiping the first drop away gently.
That's how Wayne taught me.
Yeah, he taught me too. So, yeah, And that technique's obviously been used overseas as well, because somebody wrote a full, Patty wrote a complete how to do this on my subs in one of in the comments section of one
Yeah,
of my
right.
subsects recently, so that was helpful. I think we can actually see with the naked eye is the small blood drops moving out across the slide under the coverslip. You can actually see now that you can actually see the hydrogel in a way that we couldn't see before. And I think that's
And like Heather was saying yesterday, recognizing it as part of the thing.
had
You know,
you
so well, if you just think it's a oil bubble or something like that, because we're putting, you know, the immersion oil on there. So I was always taught, you know, those sort of bubbles were just the oil, but they don't look like it anymore. They used to be circular little bubbles of oil,
So,
and
yeah,
they're not that.
I think it's important that we look at, developing a protocol or a standard or a way of looking at the blood
Because you have a
from the
group
vet
of
point of view. Yeah.
beginner microscopists, don't you, that you chat to regularly?
Yeah, it's been really good.
And it's sort of like it is one of those things that it doesn't have to cost $1 million to buy your own microscope, get a bit of gear, and start looking at blood. Like it doesn't have to be that expensive. In fact, one of the guys in your group's got quite a cheap one, and he finds a lot of different stuff to other people.
So this everybody's sort of chosen an area that other people aren't looking at, and somebody's looking at the stuff that's coming down from the sky, somebody's looking more at the water, somebody's looking at wild animals, squirrels and deer.
Wow.
It's
That Canada or the US?
US
Yeah,
maybe.
right. Okay. Well, what do I hear? At the beginning of the year, there were 160 geoengineering programs across America. That might have been the beginning of 2023, but you know, it's.
Yeah, it's hard to have
But
confidence.
hey, it doesn't
It's
exist.
hard, it doesn't exist. It's hard to have confidence that good stuff's happening when that's still ongoing.
Exactly. And I think this is why we need to have some cheap solutions for detoxification on a daily basis, but that everyone can afford. So, and then we, you know, fill in the gaps with what, you know, but it's, yeah, because we've just got to keep on doing it. Detox, detox, detox.
Yeah. We do.
So, did you want to have a look at your fourth Substack first? Did you want to have a look at
No,
that?
we might start with the first one actually.
Okay.
Yeah, on here, open it in a browser.
Yeah, so one of the things that's been a problem for me being, you know, I've been doing live blood for 16, 17 years is that you tend to ignore things. You know, when this all started rolling out a few years ago, I was still looking at blood and then I just started like following, you know, what other people were doing. So initially I was looking for the big ribbons and then we were sort of, wow, look at that. Okay, cool.
Keep you on.
Yeah, so, and it's so easy to ignore. So when I first learned, the big things you were doing, you were looking at the size and shape of the red blood cells, you would look at the health of it, you would look at the numbers of the white blood cells, so actually do a count, you know, so never let monkeys eat bananas, you know, do the actual count of your neutrophils, lymphocytes, monocytes, eosinophils, and basophils. I have seen more basophils and eosinophils in the last couple of years than ever before, but what I haven't seen, which is sort of interesting, is the things like if there was a really big bad virus out there, then what I would normally see is atypical lymphocytes and atypical monocytes. I don't
Right.
see them. I just don't see them. I used to see them all the time after flu jabs. I used to see them all the time after people had had injections to go overseas. I don't see them with this.
Right.
So I don't know what's in there, but if viruses exist or viral particles exist, it's a different thing to what's been, you know, perpetrated on the public the last 3 years.
You'd almost wonder whether it was a toxin or
Yeah,
radiation
but
rather.
because it's not acting like virus. You know, I know everyone out there says, well, I got it, you know, blah. I don't care what people say. You know, everyone gets a flu every 5, 10 years. That's how the body detoxifies. So, and that's what we call it, a flu.
Well, the pattern of an infection has been odd too, hasn't it?
It has been.
Like there'll be 12 people having Christmas lunch and 10 of them get sick.
Yeah, that
That's
doesn't
what
normally
that's like
happen.
poisoning, right? That's
Yeah.
not a, that's not
It's anyway, it's been odd.
anyway, it has been odd. So
Oh, let's get the chat going. Sorry. Thank you. Thank you.
I think that
Hey, Cheryl, good to see you.
we can
Amanda.
continue doing the lifeblood
Yes, we
analysis,
are going to screen
but
share.
we need to
In here?
nope.
Shit.
So I think the first thing we should do is have a look at the edges of the sample
Right.
and see how much hydrogel is on the edges. And this is typically what we see. So between the three places I visited, I did a count up yesterday, and I think it's about 115 people. And the majority of the people, the edge of their blood sample looks like this.
Right.
Now, we didn't used to see this
No, it does look
3 months
different.
ago,
Yeah. Yeah.
let alone 2 years ago. This is, that's
Because
it.
blood tends to sort of fall down on the slide. And you know, sometimes you would see like an outer edge of the slide, and occasionally you'd get white blood cells spilling over the edge because it all sort of just lands. But yeah, once again, I'm not seeing things like that because I used to actually go beyond the edge to have a look if there was anything else I saw, signs of fungus and white blood cells and stuff. And once again, it just isn't acting like it used to act.
And some people we see the sort of stacking of it, that the blood just seems to roll out in layers. And often we get this liquid that's beyond the edge of the blood.
Yeah.
And some of it's really dramatic, the way it layers up.
Like that's ridiculous.
So 6 months or even 12 months ago, I was seeing what seemed to be bubbles in the blood, and they'd be few and far between.
I'm
But
sure even if you've never seen blood, you can recognize that this isn't normal, hey. Right? So it's such a odd thing to have that, like this is really odd. Never, never before. Yeah, really about 6 months ago, quite dramatically. And in the past, I would have just taken another sample, assumed I screwed up. If I had have seen anything like that, which I haven't, I would have assumed I screwed up and started from scratch.
But I certainly haven't changed the way that I've been testing.
Wow.
Yeah, so some of it's very dramatic. And as the fluid rolls out, as this edge rolls out, as you've seen some of the videos, these bubbles are actually the we call this like the meniscus. This is actually bits of that as it rolls forward. But even these bubbles seem to be electrically charged. There seems
Because that's what you and Carl found in your urine as well, didn't you? Pretty bubbly patterns.
But it's interesting, sometimes, do these bubbles contain hydrogel? Or, as I'm beginning to think with a lot of this, the hydrogel is actually the bit in between the bubbles, and these are actually gaps in the hydrogel.
Right, okay.
And as Carl has articulated, probably not just hydrogel, it's probably a soup
Carl
of
is phenomenal. He's like
liquid.
a non-medical person, but he was suffering from Morgellons, what, 10 years ago or something?
No, three years
Three
ago,
years ago,
very
right.
recently.
So, and then basically, started looking at stuff and trying to find solutions for himself and other people. And he's a phenomenon.
He is.
He just has gone to the next level with everything. It's
He's
amazing.
very focused, and he won't let anybody tell him he can't do something.
No,
He just
it's
does
very
more
cool.
reading until he figures it out. But so I would have said in the past that this was the hydrogel, the
Right.
black, but now I think that the hydrogel is actually in here, and this is the gap on the hydrogel. But
Right.
having said that, we sometimes see material inside of here as well. So
Yeah.
it does seem to do both.
And once again, in the past, when I would see the oil bubbles, there was nothing in the oil bubbles. Because it was oil that you didn't get red blood cells, white blood cells in the oil. It was like quite separate, and people would say, "What's that?" And I'd say, "That's just the oil," and I'd ignore it and I'd move on. So it's really interesting seeing all this stuff inside. And once again, what Carla's found has been quite interesting.
And you can tell this is really quite thick. by the way that it creates these projections.
And how tiny those red blood cells are, you know, so some
Yeah.
of the width of it is wider than the red blood cells, which are like, what, 6 to 8 microns or something like that.
Correct, and sometimes bubbles towards the edge get really small, and but they're usually in lines. Yeah, so I've got lots of examples, and as you all know, the blood on my slide seems to move in one direction or other. And we get this pattern when the gel seems to recede.
Now that looks like an alien head with little wiggly
Well,
thing.
this looks like somebody upside down in the mud.
Oh yeah, right, the feet are up there. How the South Park people walk.
And then occasionally it's very dramatic at all, you know, if the blood's a bit thicker. In fact, I only saw this a couple of times, but it's quite clear in this sort of situation that the hydrogel, what's the mouse? Here we are. The hydrogel's this bit, and the gap is this bit.
So then you went, so then you started looking at solutions.
So I'll just play some of these videos.
Wow.
And that's how it appears on the slide. It just sort of rolls out. Now, blood, obviously, I never used to do
No.
that. But
No, I've never
can
seen the
see
edge of
it.
a slide move like that ever.
You can see the bubbles forming behind the edge. You can see how that
That's crazy.
forms. This is that other one that, with the photo of it up there, but it just shows you how it stacks.
It's like chemical trails.
Okay, so that was the first in a series. I call them that live blood checks part one. Microscopy of live blood in the nano age. So if we go back, yes.
Yeah, it'll be good to have a look at the EMF again, you know, sort of there were some experiments done a year or two ago where basically under the microscope, you know, sort of some they brought EMFs close to it to see what happened to the blood. I wonder, what did they use? Was it a modem or phones or something to, you know, so what would
Oh
you use?
I haven't been able to replicate any of
Right,
that.
okay, cool.
I had to Google Yule, you know, because I knew Yule was a contraction, and I wasn't sure whether it was YA apostrophe LL,
Y'all.
or
Hey,
Y
y'all.
apostrophe. But apparently the contraction is Y apostrophe all, anyway. So when is this much soup or hydrogel around, it's more apparent that the ribbons actually line up with the bubbles.
So you do think these ones are in the blood?
No,
Oh, okay.
I think we've made a mistake by actually focusing on these structures because I think they form really fast. So the best sort of a analogy I've come up with to date, most people have made jelly by using sheets of gelatin. Well, they've seen it on MasterChef. You know, you get the sheets, the flat sheets of gelatin, you put a bit of hot water in there, melt, and you make jelly, right? This is like the opposite of that. So we're changing the physical conditions and the sheets are dropping out of solution. Because we're taking a blood that's at 37 de degrees surrounded by more blood, and we're exposing it to a lot of oxygen, changes in temperature, changes in pressure. And where these gaps are, there's obviously different conditions as well. It may well be that the oxygen level in here is higher than the oxygen level and just nearby, because these things when there's a lot more hydrogel around, it's a lot more obvious that these things are forming near the bubbles. And so I've got lots of examples of how this seems to happen. So basically, what I'm saying, the conditions are different generally, and they're more different at this point. So this process happens near the bubbles. Are you checking the chat on the side, eh?
No, but I probably should.
Okay. So just as an aside, so I refer to these things as gels, and we have called them protoplasts. Oh, sorry, that's right. All good. And biofilms in the past, but I don't think they are. I think this reflects part of the tech, and they have changed in appearance. I mean, look at that regular pattern of dots. That's
Yeah.
not a random pattern of particles in there.
No.
Whereas we used to see random patterns of particles. So just as an aside, you can see that looks like it's dropped out of solution. The particles have been in the solution. They have been arranged by charge, and they've separated themselves by charge. This bigger one is further away from this one.
You know, some of the hypothesis that I've sort of heard about is that part of what they're trying to do is use our electrical energy as human beings to charge other things, which is sort of a weird concept. But on the cell membranes, there's something called a zeta potential. You know, and looking at all the clottiness of the bloods, I'm wondering whether somehow it's stealing the zeta potential or changing the zeta potential, or because the zeta potential is about keeping those cells separated. And we're just not seeing that. You know, in fact, we're seeing the opposite of that. So,
Well,
anyway.
it's interesting that as the hydrogel contamination seems to have increased, the amount of rouleaux has decreased and the amount of structures has decreased.
Are you seeing normal red blood cells?
Yeah. Not so much in these pictures because they tend to be more rouleaux when close to
Ah, close to the hydrogel and the structures.
in the
Okay, cool.
structures, yeah. That's kind of cute. It looks like a tree frog poking out of a pipe. Yeah.
One looks like an angel. I mean, a Bart Simpson-headed angel.
So base what is the take home from this? Well, I've just put this out there and nobody's really criticized me or commented on it, but my thinking is that these are precipitating out on the slide. We can't use these as a biomarker for contamination. We need to focus on the degree of hydrogel contamination. We need to see this as just having turned up and not happening in the blood.
Just because graphene or whatever it is everywhere.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure lots of people have seen the patent that was approved in 2022 using graphene as part of geoengineering, so part of something to do with weather modification.
Yeah, so loads and loads. This one was an interesting structure, and there's obviously bubbles, but these bubbles actually dissolve.
Yeah.
So even the ones that don't seem to be associated with bubbles may well be associated with previous bubbles. Do you like that
That's
one?
beautiful.
Yeah,
That's quite spectacular.
there's quite a bit of digital filtering and enhancement in there. But yeah, it's like a
think the Brisbane City Council will sponsor some artwork by Dr. David Nixon.
No, no. But this one is quite typical, where the 5% is wrapping right around the bubble. And clearly, the conditions in this area are likely to be different from the conditions in this area. So I did a bright field version of one of those. That ended up being in the wrong place, but never mind. Yeah. So loads and loads and loads of examples. I hadn't realized I'd actually put so much in here. Anyway, this
Yeah.
can serve as a backup. So that's probably my favorite one, was that structure just wrapping around the bubbles. There's a body in my current thinking is that they are a consequence of the polymers or the proteins precipitating out of the slide. And there may be a concentration element to it as well. And I found that with some of the medicines, is if that I concentrated the medicines, the fibers wouldn't form.
Right.
Interesting. So, or didn't form. Okay, so if we're going to assess the live blood from the technology point of view, assessing the degree of hydrocontamination, looking at the structures and how they form relative to those
Yeah.
bubbles, and then
What about the nano this
that's part three.
Aha.
Yeah.
What about our speckly things?
Now, speckly things. Well, that's the other part of the contamination that we need to look at closely. And so, on part three of this, what I did was just that. So, I was looking at how the, so we can look at the particulates themselves, and we can also look at how they interact with the red cells. So, some people's red cells seem to be almost immune to the particles. And other people's aren't.
Yeah, right. So yeah, so that bottom one there, that's a keynotite. So that's like the death of the cells. By the time they're looking like bottle top caps like that, they're on their way out. In theory, red blood cells should have a 4 month shelf life. So if I saw lots of them and it was all over the place, whereas in the past I would see them on the edge of the slide.
Right.
You know, so you'd sit because you know the oxygen would seep in underneath there. So whereas when you see it a lot, then I would assume someone had cancer or something like that.
The interesting thing is, I don't think these are akinocytes.
Oh, okay.
And Prof. Robin Crosford was keen to say they were as well, but
Okay, no.
I suspect because might be able to see with the video. It's probably too small.
Maybe.
Well, what we can see in a lot of these videos is the cells start out looking pretty normal out here. As they get forced towards the edge and into the hydrogel and into the particles, they start developing dots on their surface.
Oh, you think they're dots on the surface?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking they are. In Carl's actually done some really good work with this. And you can actually stain the dots, and he's actually got pictures with these dots are different colors.
Of course he has.
Yeah. So it's more than just what we've seen in the past. And that would make sense. So the people whose blood cells seem to be impervious to this process are those that are fit and eating a low-carb diet.
Right.
And maybe that means they've got a better
Constitution or
Z or a better charge on their cells.
and maybe that's the people who do, sort of work on, like things like, meditations and Rife machine or bioresonance or, well, anything good for us. Lots of protection around the house, lots of crystals, lots of,
Need
maybe all
more.
that stuff
We
helps.
need more crystals, yeah.
We do. I never put mine outside to cleanse. I really should do it while we've got a sunny day. Although I'm sure that'll be over by 1 o'clock.
The clouds yesterday were interesting, weren't they?
Oh
Did you look at
man,
them?
perfectly blue sky in the morning.
Lots of clouds with lots of microwave radiation on them. So the colors are changing because I'm changing the filtering and filtering out the lighter colored particles. It's possible the lighter colored particles are kind of microns or normal particles, but these darker ones, which are moving quite differently and quite and larger, aren't.
And the classic thing from a naturopathic perspective, once again, when I learned a long time ago, it was if someone had had any fat in a meal, then you would expect to have some chylomicrons. Now, look how pretty
Yeah,
that
but they ain't cut
That's
this.
not
They're
chylomicrons.
not colored microns, yeah. And the further south I went, the bigger the particles got. And I think the spraying down, well, the geoengineering in northern New South Wales has been really bad. So I don't think these are kinesites. I mean, there may be an element of that, and there almost certainly is, but I think a lot of what we're seeing is actually drops on the particles. So this one's interesting.
I mean, could the red blood cells be taking them in through their membrane? Because if
They
they are
could be.
nano, then.
They could be. And these particles that are moving here certainly seem to be within the cell.
Because in the old days, once again, Heinz bodies were classic little red blood cells that still had matter on the inside, but they hadn't been fully formed before being released from the bone marrow. But they didn't move. There was no moving stuff inside the Heinz bodies. They were pretty much a red blood cell with lots of bits and pieces inside. And.
I was hoping I'd be able to get a larger image.
So, hi to everyone. So, I'm David and I'm working here with Madonna as a counsellor. Now, one thing that I'm wondering about is with these things, is it being made internally from a some sort of stimulus? Or do you mean there's obviously some external things because we know that they're having a cause, but then there's because, like with the T cells in the thing, they're self-manufacturing. And so what I know about trauma responses is that, like, for example, they did the adverse childhood experiences tests. Now, they found children with adverse childhood experiences ended up with physical things like, 10 times the likelihood of having heart attack or 40 times the likelihood of. So the psychological component has a physical effect, and a stress response does that too. And the other thing, in because I studied family counselling and also institutional family and institutional things, and wherever there's betrayal, trauma is amplified, and therefore and everyone feels betrayed, whichever side they were on the treatment that was offered in the pandemic. And so betrayal amplifies trauma, which would amplify stress effects, which would they've proven that the stress responses have physical outcomes, especially when they're in younger people. Same with adult people. And I'm just wondering, maybe there's because of the situation, there'll be a stress response because technically people have trauma that's resolvable usually, like especially there's been a lot of people dying and very sick. And there's standard ways you can do it, and they're becoming less treatable. And it looks like what it's called in counselling is traumatic grief, complex traumatic grief, when there's more betrayal. And I'm just looking at that, wondering if if the because as a counsellor, I go, well, if I can get under that, maybe the body will stop producing the garbage. Not sure, just an idea.
I think what we're looking at is contamination from the outside.
Yeah.
And I do think we're seeing evidence of assembly of structures and other processes going on within our bodies.
Mm-hmm. Does hydrogel self-create? Like, has Karen Kingston found patents associated with hydrogel replicating to a certain size in the body or anything like that?
Well, we know that some hydrogels can absorb 400 times their weight in water.
Right.
So
okay.
They're like that stuff they put in the ground when they're like in desert places and they hold the water.
Yeah, that's form of hydrogel in that process, yeah.
Right.
Like sponges.
I agree, David. Like the higher the stress, the less the body can detoxify. Absolutely.
Especially betrayal, and a lot of people feel betrayed.
Yeah.
They took it or they didn't take it. They feel betrayed by the institutions that they should have trusted. And that amplifies trauma, so therefore stress response, and that will have a physical effect.
It will.
Totally.
It will have a direct effect on the immune system.
I wonder if they've done any blood work on kids with expressed trauma, and I might have looked that up, actually.
Yeah, right.
I've never thought of that. Anyway.
Because one of the things that I teach in kinesi is about fibrin. You know, so fibrin is just a substance that the liver releases when the body's under stress, and going back 10,000 years ago, it would deliberately release it when we were about to get attacked by a tiger. So when the tiger pounced, you clotted and you didn't bleed out and die before you got to the medicine woman. So for the kinesiologists, it's about muscle testing the liver and asking around fibrin. And if fibrin is there, then it's acute phase response, which will be in people, you know, who have trauma. That will clot the blood, thicken the blood, make us tired, but it can also do a lot of damage, cause a lot of rouleau, the stickiness of the blood. It does damage the zeta potential, absolutely. So, but I don't see a lot of fibrin in people these days either. It's a different thing. Like, it looks so different, you know, these days. Oh my gosh, look, normal red blood cells. Remember the good old days?
To say, well, things have got better, the blood cells are looking better, there's less rouleau, there's less structure.
Yeah.
But I think that's a mistake. So what I was trying to do was show you the cartoon, which we found in a paper, which describes white cells taking up quantum dots.
Yeah, right.
Which one of my colleagues found. And we shouldn't be able to see quantum dots. It's supposed to be too small. So to have the scientific community saying that they are taking them up and suggesting that they probably look like this is amazing. So these are the dots that are being taken up by the neutrophil.
Beautiful.
Yeah, and these red cells don't look too bad, eh?
No, looking good. And again, for kinesiologists, you could actually use the muscle testing for the immune system and then check in relation to neutrophils, lymphocytes, monocytes, eosinophils, and basophils.
So
just sort of balance the body to it.
So the strategy is to reduce the contamination coming in as best you can, simple. Possible to make that zero, and then support your immune system and white cells, and we know ways of doing that, so that they can, fill this function better. We know that they're actively seeking out these dots, and they're consuming them and mopping them up. I mean, this in itself is another good example of how we know these things aren't supposed to be there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because we've never been taught that white cells will take up
chylomicrons,
yes. For example. Yes. So this is some sort of texture at about 1,000 times magnification.
That is beautifully speckly and colourful.
Yeah, so the assumption is that the brighter, whiter ones are the normal cytoplasmic granules of the neutrophil, but these certainly aren't, right? And you can see that the same size and colors as the ones that are bouncing around behind it. So this was the cartoon. I was just trying to find a larger one. But here we've got some quantum dots that are entering the white. So, well, these are supposed to be like an order of magnitude smaller. So I'm not quite sure how they explain that.
So but, this is in science.
This is in science. Red dot. Yeah. So if you go to my subset, you can get that.
That's great.
That reference. Well, we do see a lot of white cells that are like that, that do appear like like the mummified, which is not good, but again, it's on the slide, so it's hopefully doing better in vivo. Right, so assessing the amount of hydrogel contamination by looking at the periphery of the sample, assessing the structures in relation to the hydrogel bubbles, assessing the red cells in terms of how they interact with the particles, assessing the white cells and how they're interacting with the particles, and they can vary a lot. You know, it can be really hard with some people to find a white cell that looks like it's doing anything. Right. Okay, then what was the next thing I was going to talk about? Okay, so then I wrote my subset last night, part four. I was actually going to make this bit part five, but it was getting late, and I thought, well, I'll do the interesting stuff. So this is my part four, and I'll put a bit of a recap in there. And then I get to this. We've got some feedback. Heads up.
Awesome.
Cool. Okay. So I expected to get some sort of comment on and people saying, well, actually, no, because the implication of this is that, you know, that practitioners that are using the structures as markers for treatment shouldn't be. That's really what I'm saying. So we need to be focusing on
the hydrogel.
On the hydrogel. Yeah. And if you can see it with the naked eye, then we should be able to develop an assessment system that people can do themselves. Okay, so okay, this is a bit of a diversion from what we want to see, but up until 2 weeks ago, I was able to say I've never seen anything that looks like the technology I've seen on the slides in the blood, but I can no longer say that because I have seen this. And even this magnification, these black squares are highly suspicious of the black squares that I've seen in Salt and Ceylon and all the injectable medications I've looked at throw these black squares up from time to time. Some solutions smaller than others. Even standard salt will do this about 10 or 20% of the time because throw black crystals. Okay, so this is using the 100 times oil immersion objective. I had a discussion with Matteo Taylor and Shimon about the structure. Matteo's summary basically was the jury is out as to whether this is tech or not. And if it's not tech, then it's something rare and we need to get hematologists or somebody to comment on it, which we won't obviously. But his eye was drawn to this area here because he's always looking out for areas that show discrete components.
Right.
But
Matteo and Shimon are both electrical engineers.
Yeah.
Mm.
Mm. But obviously, there's a few crystals in here that look a bit sus too, particularly this one, which has got four colored dots in it.
Yeah, right.
So, I've got.
And I do wonder now, because they've had nanotechnology in food since 2007. You know, so they've changed the law to, you know, that generally regarded as safe, GRAS. So if it was ever in a big something in the body, then they made it nanotechnology and popped it into our foods and said, oh, well, it's generally regarded as safe, so I'm sure it's fine. Which makes me then wonder about the crystals I've been seeing over the years, because that's around when I started doing live blood, but I always assumed they were cholesterol crystals or uric acid crystals or something like that.
Yeah. So we, you know, we can't put these down to being cholesterol or uric acid crystals. I mean, it's just, I don't believe we can.
And not with the nanotech, you know, the nano quantum dots or whatever they are in them.
Exactly. So anybody wants to have a closer look, but this is that square again with the second one's blue, that one's gold. So this from a 72-year-old unvaccinated patient who was feeling pretty fit and healthy and thought, was sure her blood was going to be fine. And as always, it was at the end of the day. And this is the second one, which was shortly afterwards. And whereas this structure seems to be, oops, it's your mouse again.
Oh, a little mousy.
Okay, so this one seems to be crystal based. This structure seems to be gel based.
Right.
And even if we just look at this black square.
Yeah.
And ignore this one and this one and this one and these straight lines. Even if we ignore all that and just focus on this bit, this is weird and very reminiscent of some of the technology that I have seen. And this is a bright field image, and you can see that it's clearly a different material. It does seem to be made up of two smaller rectangles. So yeah, I've went to town on the color filters. So that's photo stitch. So again, they're all on my Substack. So the guy who, this is a 20-year-old guy who was a carpenter's apprentice. He was unvaccinated, but he did have quite a high EMF exposure.
Right.
And this was his degree of hydrogel contamination on the side. And he took activated charcoal, 1 teaspoon a day, for 6 days, and his blood was significantly better. And there were areas where the didn't appear to be any hydrogel at all, which wasn't the case previously. This is a colleague that you and I know, who shall remain nameless, who's been experimenting in a very disciplined way with activated charcoal, and has managed to get her blood to go from here to here. So basically, all the ribbons.
Was that over 3 days or 6 days or something?
Yeah, it was less than a week.
Yeah.
And we left with this thickened meniscus on the border, but everything else had gone, the structures and the gels. There were quite a few dots that still left.
Did she just do that, or did she then went on and started purifying her water as well?
I see. Good point. So, so this basically nicely, somewhat nicely, leads into the discussion of, you know, what we can do about it. And I think that also leads into what David was talking about. You know, we can't just show the bad stuff. We need to be
got to have positives.
Some solution. And I think the key thing is to focus on reducing the contamination as best we can. And the most obvious place to start with that is looking at water and how people are consuming their water,
yeah,
getting it from, and then looking at the option of activated charcoal.
Because that's easy and cheap. And it's once again, the kinesiologist, that's an easy thing to add in. You know, ask the body, I just do a heap teaspoon in my collagen every night. It's got no flavour, you know.
Yeah.
And funnily enough, another colleague of ours, she uses activated minerals, you know, to just keep the teeth nice and strong.
We need to get a bit more info on that.
Yeah,
I was driving over.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a cheaper version, but basically what I've been doing is adding
cheap version.
Yeah, no, because it was whatever she's, you know, that thing you do at the chemist's.
Compounded,
yeah. It's always expensive. But, you know, having some mineralization, you know, making sure you're giving your teeth a rinse. But if you had that with activated charcoal as well as some minerals, you know, give your body a swish and a swallow before bed, you know, and then you're more alkaline before bed. You know, and alkalinity, I think, will help all of this as well, because the disease state will always start in an acidic environment or a lot of the time.
So activated charcoal production is really interesting. So my understanding is that coconut shells make the ideal starting point.
Right.
And I was reading about this online just yesterday, because there's quite a few manufacturers of activated charcoal in Australia, and one of them was describing their process, which was a 20-meter by 2.5-meter long tube, which is rotating, and the coconut shells go at one end, and they heat them up really high with high pressure steam, but low oxygen. So they don't combust.
Right.
And the process results in blowing lots of little holes in the charcoal.
And is that part of the activation process?
That's the activation
process. Oh, there you go.
So the activation
process. Never thought about what that meant.
High steam, high heat. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure bentonite clay, absolutely. Bentonite clay is a bit more expensive than charcoal. So, but I reckon, you know, any of those combination of binders is going to be useful.
So Madonna and I did a little bit of looking at that last week, and the impression was that any of the binders were going to be useful. We don't have direct evidence for bentonite clay or zeolite. But we need to sort of formally look at that. But in terms of a population basis, you could buy $50 worth of activated charcoal that will last you, your partner, your family for a couple of years. So it's a pretty cheap option. And half a teaspoon or a teaspoon in the morning in water seems to do the trick. Seems to work better, faster, and you know.
I'll say that's why the morning, so that first thing in the morning.
So, but that's when I've been doing. So I've been taking it then on an empty stomach, and then intermittently fasting for as long as I'm able to. And I've got some before and after photos. But not in such a disciplined way, but they do show improvements. And we've done that with a few people now, just using the activated charcoal and showing the improvements. So, and I think we need to feed it to our pets in our livestock. Certainly had discussions with farmers, and there's commercially available livestock feed which has got charcoal in it as well. So that's good.
Yeah, definitely.
And we've been doing another thing that Carl's been, so Carl is a colleague in the UK. We were talking about before, and one of the things that Carl had used previously was a little bit of sodium citrate in the blood, because that improved the visual visualization of some of the more difficult to see organisms in the blood, and he noticed that the technology appeared to stop moving. So he thought, well, that's got to be a good thing. I better eat some, you know,
as you do.
And he felt a lot better within hours. So
it was like a clearness of mind and clarity of thought.
Yeah,
and
less brain fog, less fatigue, basically. So the sodium citrate, as far as we could tell, doesn't appear to improve the blood, although there is evidence that it may well help to break down some of the hydrogels. So we're still figuring that out.
Yeah, didn't he say that he saw that the nanotechnology stopped moving?
Yes. So it seemed to have an impact
on the nanotechnology.
But there does seem to be some chemistry behind it, in that the sodium citrate can prevent some of the cross-linking and alginate-based hydrogel. So alginate hydrogels come from algae.
So would it be working through the citric acid cycle?
Not sure.
Hmm.
Sodium citrate does seem to have a lot of modes of action. It's an anticoagulant. It has some degree of action as a chelator, particularly for calcium. So one of our colleagues, who's a dentist, has a hydrogel mix which has got alginate for making molds for dentures. And he put a little bit of sodium citrate and it stopped the compound from hardening. So
right.
So he was on Zoom with a spoon and this material, really? Which is still liquid, wouldn't go hard. So that's interesting.
Absolutely. So sodium citrate, is it with potassium citrate?
Well, we've tried potassium citrate, magnesium citrate. When I say we, Carl has tried that. And sodium citrate seems to have a different effect from the other citrate molecules. Yeah, we're
okay.
And sodium citrate is quite cheap. So where do people get it from?
So sodium citrate is available as a pretty common food additive, so that's kind of handy if you want to eat it. And you can buy it online. It's about $30 a kilo. Even cheaper charcoal. So you can buy 1,000 grams for $30, and you probably want 1 or 2 grams once or twice a day, so it's going to last you ages. We have made some up capsules, and that just makes it a lot more expensive, but it's quite a convenient way to take it and have it available. But it's mildly salty. It comes in a few different forms, 3 different forms, I think, mainly. But it's mainly the trisodium salt of sodium citrate. And it does taste a little bit salty. But it's used in making cheese and yogurt and all sorts of things.
So right.
It's pretty readily available. And you can also make it, if you know what you're doing, by adding sodium bicarbonate to citric acid in the right sort of quantities.
The other thing you were sort of thinking about was the whole dry fasting thing.
Right. So.
Which is an interesting concept, you know, and it's an interesting concept.
Everybody knows what fasting is, that's going without food, right? So dry fasting is going without food and water. Because hydrogels need water. And if you increase the demand for water in the body by reducing the intake of water, that does seem to have an impact. So we're still trying to think about that. I've posted some thoughts on that from a colleague overseas who was keen to bring it to people's attention, and I purchased a couple of books to do some background reading on this. I suspect maybe that the combination of sodium citrate combined with a few hours of not drinking any water, it may well prove to be as simple as not drinking water overnight and then maybe abstaining from water till middle or late afternoon, which, providing you're in air conditioning or whatever, isn't too difficult for most people. And maybe doing that once or twice a month sort of thing. But we've yet to figure that out. So there's a few strategies and a few tools that we've stumbled on, teased out, come across, whatever, over the last couple of months. So that's pretty exciting.
And yeah.
We've got a pretty good group of people looking at this now.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. It's and it's challenging because, like, with people with the blood, a lot of them are feeling good, aren't they? They aren't necessarily feeling unhealthy.
So what is the concern about what we're seeing? I guess that's a pretty good starting point, a pretty good question. The concern is that the degree of contamination, particularly the degree of particulates in the blood, potentially makes us vulnerable to changes in frequency or radiation attack or the other sort of things that we're aware of going on in the background.
Yeah. And at some stage, our genes, our ability to cope, you know, it's going to go downhill if we're not looking after ourselves all the time.
Yes. And when I see the stuff in the blood, I think shark, not dolphin. So if we can return the thing back towards the where they were before, the better. So
cleansing our water again, talking about our water supply.
Coming back to the water. Carl's pretty adamant that reverse osmosis provides the best available water, but that's not practical for a lot of people, and you do need to change the filters a lot more regularly, like every 2 or 3 months, and that's an ongoing expense. So we have shown, you know, significant reduction in particulates in the water and improvements in the appearance under the microscope by distilling the water. And certainly there's quite a few researchers overseas that recommend distilling water, and I can hear the intakes of breath down the camera. And so distilling water is not without its problems, obviously.
Yeah, it takes all the minerals out.
Takes all the minerals, that also takes all the structure out. So we
need thought about that.
We need to restructure the water, and I know Madonna's got a nice organite disc underneath her water filter. And I've got some smaller discs that I, like that one.
Just like this one.
Exactly like that.
So
I've got a commercial water distiller. The cheaper ones are available on any of those platforms that you buy stuff.
One of the interesting bits of information from Zoe yesterday was that here in Australia, they don't put chlorine into our water supplies anymore. They use chloramine. And chloramine is longer lasting and more toxic. And most chlorine removal filters don't take it out. How fantastic is that? So, you know, yet another challenge. I've been using my, if anyone gets a terahertz wand at any stage, you know, have it on your shopping list at some stage, you can terahertz frequency your water as well. I think basically, like, probably like Rife technology, if the cells are normal, you know, it just goes through it. But as soon as it sees something that isn't supposed to be there, it sort of speeds up the frequency to help to wake it up, to break it down, to shimmy it along.
It's very interesting technology, and I'm keen to learn more.
There's some interesting stuff.
We've got to
get that water supply clean, you know, in whatever way we've got to do it.
So you can buy a cheap water distiller, and if you're using it every day, which will be mainly last 12 months, but it'll only cost you $80, $90.
Right.
So it's like a big hot water jug that collects the steam and puts it into a separate jug. So I have three or four of those organite discs underneath the jug. So as it's been made, it's been structured. Then I put it through a Brita filter. That's to improve the family's likelihood of consuming it. Otherwise, it doesn't taste that good. And then I remineralize it with some Celtic salt or some other organic mineral salt.
One of my friends, and I'm just sending her a quick message, she's actually got a little jug that you can buy on Amazon for like $100 or something. I can't remember what it's called, which is why I'm sending her a quick message. And it basically does take out most fluoride and chlorine as well, and she travels with it. She always has it in her suitcase anywhere she goes, so that, you know, anywhere she is, she can filter the water and give herself. Otherwise, she won't drink while she's away, which is pretty much what I do.
Yeah, it's good having those sort of habits, those sort of disciplines to stick to.
We've got to do, and because we can't trust, and I know, Jen, you know, over in Canada, they're doing all sorts of shenanigans as well, so very,
mugs very are hard, aware, you know, you can't go out and have a coffee at a cafe. If you don't,
we just pull these out as our little coasters. Structure our coffee when we're out and about.
Yeah, but you can't filter it. Maybe they're only using tap water.
Yeah.
Or
funny.
Insufficient filtering.
No, good to. Because the colleague who showed her blood, the second she was doing the activated charcoal, but she also did purified water. They haven't been drinking purified water, and I'm like, man.
Yeah, she was drinking tap water, and the hydrogel was coming back very quickly. So she got a water distiller and remineralized it. I don't think she's structuring it yet.
Yeah.
But
it doesn't have to be expensive. There is, like in Australia, there's a group called Grander, and they've got these little things, discs about yay big. And they're about, I don't know, $200 or something, but they last forever. You know, so I've got one of my water systems sitting on that. And, you know, bit by bit.
Yeah, so the whole organite thing is another conversation itself. So these discs usually are a third quartz, a third resin, and a third metal. And the metal apparently acts as an antenna and helps to charge the water. I'm not sure if that's the really best terminology, but it helps with the structure of the water. And then that leads on to a conversation about what structured water is. But basically, in this context, structuring the water helps the body absorb it better. So you actually need less water if the water you're getting is structured water. And water that's contained within vegetables and fruit is in a structured form, by and large, that's my
understanding. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
The research was from Germany or somewhere. The guy who certainly started the whole structured water thing was very much about, because it used to come off the mountains through the thing, and that's very different water to what we get in the tap. And of course,
so if people want to take it further, one of the books that is usually recommended is by a US doctor by the name of Gerald Pollack. And the book's called The Fourth Stage of Water. So he describes, he terms it easy water. So that, you know, water comes as solid, liquid, and gas, but also comes as easy water, which is structured water. And I think, I'm pretty sure all the water within our cells is in a structured form.
Yeah.
And it allows water to be a conductor. To some extent.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my understanding. But there's a lot of work to do there.
Yeah.
It's a whole other thing. We need to have groups in our community that are focused on the water. Just like we need to have groups that are focused on protecting our food supply and protecting our animals. We need to be growing food undercover.
Vertical farming. You're agreeing with Bill Gates.
Yeah.
Yeah, not. Oh dear, I know, it's a worry, isn't it? One of my clients, she was growing a whole bunch of stuff. There was a rainstorm, obviously, and pretty much everything died. So she was so disappointed at her first ever,
Yeah.
because there
Well,
was so much crap in the
I had a
rain.
friend who grows bonsai in New Zealand. And after a rain event, everything that was out in the rain curled up its leaves. But he managed to resuscitate, almost all of them by using low concentration hydrogen peroxide and sodium citrate.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, that's interesting.
So the only one that wasn't resuscitatable was the marijuana
So,
plant.
how is hydrogen peroxide helping people? What's that doing?
Well, it's adding oxygen, basically.
Right, okay.
That's my understanding. But I think there's pretty complex chemistry going on there too, and
Right.
I haven't really explored it all that much. But I have had people tell me that the sodium citrate does seem to work better for them if they take it after they've had a low dose of
Yeah.
hydrogen peroxide. So you've got to get the food grade, got to be very careful with it because the food grade one normally comes to 35%, and that'll, you can't, you've got to dilute it from there carefully.
Right. And what sort of dose are people taking?
So my understanding is, like 7 or 8 drops and of 35% in a couple of 100 mils of water, that's
Right,
sort of
okay.
amount. So it's pretty dilute.
Right, okay. Cool.
Yeah.
So it's just
But please
another.
get your own advice on that
Yeah,
one.
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Any questions? Any questions,
Let's
thoughts?
see if the chat goes wild.
How are things over in Canada, Jen? Feeling a bit less crazy?
Recently, a lady, one of my clients is she was going to be a nuclear physicist when she was younger. She had started at one of the universities in down near Toronto. So she's in her 70s now, so that's how smart this woman is. But she heard that they are now going to start vaccinating people in Canada for to raise their immune systems so that they don't get COVID and they don't get sick. And they're going to be, she said, it's going to be, they're going to be using like a protein. And she does the tables where she can find out what people have. And I don't really understand it all, but she said the problem that she has with getting to Alzheimer's and diabetes and things like that is that it's surrounded with proteins. So she said, when they start doing this, these diseases that people have are going to be even harder to, like make it better because they're going to be surrounded with these proteins that they're going to be injecting people with. And
Oh my.
so that was in the last few weeks that I heard that. I'm like, oh my gosh, like it's never ending here
No,
with.
it's never ending. And this is different, but about 5, 10 years ago, I was at a conference and this guy from Maryland University in America, he was an Italian, very cute guy. He's up on stage and he happened to be saying that they finally proved that there's such a thing as leaky gut. So naturopaths, of course, we've been talking about it for 30 years. He was saying, yes, there's this thing called leaky gut. And he did this whole demonstration of all the naturopaths are sitting there going, oh, we've been talking about it forever. Anyway, one of the things that happens with the little gut, your gut sort of has these little things called zonulin poke out into the bloodstream all day long, which tells the gut what white blood cells to throw out there. Now, the other thing about that is that, if we need anything to come from the stomach out into the bloodstream, like, your immune system, which 90% is in the small intestine, that's how it happens. So he was developing a drug so that people could take it before eating gluten if they were celiac. And he was saying, the great thing is there's no side effects. And I'm thinking, how does that work? And he was saying that it stops the leaky gut. And I'm thinking, okay, so how's that going to affect the immune system? How's that going to affect the process of the gut talking to the bloodstream, that zonulin, you know, that I can't remember the process, but basically this little process that's happening all day, every day, they're basically shutting that down. So they have these ideas and get paid lots of money to have these ideas, I'm sure. But, you know, like it's interesting.
It'd be faster just to shoot people for crying out loud. I don't
Oh, I'm
understand
sure
why
that'll be on the list next.
Poison us slowly, but yeah.
What could
it's a never ending zoo
go wrong?
here.
What could possibly go wrong? Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. But, you know, so because we've got three kinesiologists here, you know, from this perspective, you can imagine when you're muscle testing, you can be checking for the hydrogel. You can be checking whether or not dry fasting, intermittent fasting, fasting could be a good thing for those people. You could be checking for graphene, graphene oxide. You can check for the nanoparticulates, nanotechnology in people's body, as well as the electromagnetic frequencies and other magnetic processes going on. The more toxic our body is, I think the more we attract all those frequencies out there in the environment. We get to be a better antenna. We want to be the worst antenna we can be. The worst antenna we can be. Oh, I don't know whether it was real, but I saw something with good old Klaus Schwab talking about, I don't know whether it was nano dust or nanoparticles or something, basically, to get into the environment so they'll be able to make sure they can keep us compliant if we're not following all their rules. Don't know if we're there's a lot of pretend stuff going on at the moment with all this AI. I just don't know what's real. I watch things and I go, well, I want that particular Jew, but I don't know if it is. You
yeah.
can't trust mm-hmm. anything.
Yeah.
But we are live. We're live and we're funny. Haha. So yeah. So any final thoughts, David?
Just flicking through what I thought we'd talk about. I think we've covered everything we wanted.
Yeah, the dry fasting is an interesting concept. And with intermittent fasting, you know, the first 12 hours, we get a huge amount of benefit. For every 1 hour over 12 hours, you double the benefit of the previous 12 hours. So that's why people who do manage to do the intermittent fasting get quite good results. And I was chatting again to my quite damaged client yesterday afternoon because all her family tries to feed her all the time, but she's had no appetite since she's been damaged, like, you know, months and months and months. So then it's hard because you've got to think of something you can bother eating when you have no appetite, but everyone's trying to feed her all the time. So luckily yesterday, when someone came in her appointment with her, I was saying, no, 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 let her fast. Let her fast. It's actually good for her. I'm sure it won't change, but it's a start, you know. Yeah, so but don't forget different levels of fasting. And from the intermittent fasting perspective, they talk about the number of hours without food. And you can have water in there. You can have lemon juice. You can have black tea. You can have, you know, sort of it's basically things that don't affect your biochemistry. So it's basically no food. But then you know, it's sort of like you can do a 24, so eating within a 4 hour period, or an 18-6, eat within a 6 hour period, or a 16-8, eating within an 8 hour period. But lots of studies on all of those that just show how many more benefits we get for people who can manage it. Some people can't manage it. And some people would rather slit their own throat than dry fast. So some people can do stuff, some people can't. But yeah, we're just trying to take the toxins out of people's body. Oh, well, at least the food. So then the body is focusing on something else. So imagine if you're not focusing on breaking down your food, because eating is inflammatory. We're releasing a whole bunch of inflammatory hormones to digest our food. If we're taking that process out of the equation, then we're giving the body the opportunity to detox.
Yeah, I think there's a significant group of people who have difficulty fasting. And a lot of them are addicted to carbohydrates or sugar.
Yeah, right.
And if they don't eat, they have a tendency to crash their blood sugar, which makes them super hungry.
And angry and nasty and, you know, it's the old don't come near me. Yeah.
And you know, that is a situation that can be improved by having a transition period where you don't eat the processed food or the high fructose corn syrup or the white flour, white rice, etc.
Yeah.
But you do have complex carbs in terms of pumpkin and sweet potato and and things, and you just you provide your body with carbohydrate to keep your blood sugar levels maintained.
Actually, I will mention one of the complications that's happened the last few years is because so many people were getting heart inflammation. And of course, so many studies now show that, let's face it, there's lots of jab damage going on with the hearts. Because so many people have been put on anti-anxiety, antipsychotic, all those SSRIs and things. So that's one component. The other thing is a lot of people are being put on heart drugs. So basically, if we are on a certain type of heart drug, which are beta blockers long term can destroy the microbiome of the gut. And the more the gut microbiome is damaged, the less food plant toxins your body can cope with. So, again, for the kinesiologists, it's worth checking things like salicylates and oxalates and histamines and FODMAPs and, some big plant toxins. You can check the proteins as well, but it doesn't tend to be those so much, so it tends to be like dairy tends to be fine for a lot of people. Eggs tends to be fine, the meats tend to be fine. But then of course when we're getting into fish and stuff like that, don't forget we're messing with those poor little things all the time as well. So, we've just got to do the best we can do. But certainly oxalates and beta blockers have been proven. So sometimes a low oxalate diet or a low histamine diet or a low salicylate or a low FODMAP diet can be part of the equation. Cheryl will be doing a lot of that in our signature course. And Nicola. And Nicola. Yeah.
Excellent.
Beautiful.
Great.
I've just got one little.
Come round to it. Your volume's off.
I was just having a quick look at some of the biological markers of trauma.
Yep.
And there's it involves blood flow, different types of blood problems, inflammation everywhere.
Yeah.
What is it called? Oh, I can't remember. But a lot of the markers with this stuff are also because you can interpret things from different angles.
Yeah.
And so trauma responses are quite similar to a lot of the stuff biologically. And I just had a look, there's quite a lot of research on it if you want to look it up.
And actually, just quickly, it wouldn't be a bad idea to mention, David, mentioning about the breathing techniques that help to increase nitric oxide, which is really important for blood supply and.
And nitric oxide is produced when you hum in your nose. So when you go, hold it, move around, and then sniff it in, it'll produce, and only nose breathing, it'll produce, I can't remember, it's like 500 or 1,000 times more nitric oxide than normal. And nitric oxide really increases blood flow. And it also is a, what do you call it, a antiseptic or a, what's it, increases your immune response. And it also includes blood flow, and I worked that out looking at sexual problems. And so the whole in women, this whole area, nitric oxide increases blood flow to it, which is really
And with
interesting. I
men,
found that in a
naturopaths
study.
have used nitric oxide sort of
Not
supplements
nitric. Oh, is it? Yeah, not yeah, nitric oxide. Yeah, sorry.
for erectile issues for years and
Oh,
years as
really?
well. Yeah.
So nitric oxide and it's free, and so deep breathing. Holding it and then long outward nose, almost the same. The yogis worked that a long time ago. Increases your immune system, blood flow, and also long outward breath produces more carbon dioxide in the system to help blood flow. So when there's more, the blood flows better, focus increases and relaxation increases.
Yeah.
All with that one thing. There's more things that happen just with it. Deep breath and long outward. There's a lot of other things it does too,
Yeah.
because I studied that specifically.
Yeah, nice. First sunshine in the morning wakes up your pineal, but also activates your nitric oxide using Listerine and other antiseptics for the mouth. Mouthwashes destroy the microbiome on the tongue that actually help to create nitric oxide in your blood vessels.
Really? Because in India, they don't brush their teeth, they scrape their tongue manually to clear that off.
Yeah, right.
They have these tongue scrapers.
Oh, made of copper?
No, usually, well, sometimes. The expensive ones are made of silver.
Yeah, right.
And yeah, they do have copper ones, actually. I had seen that.
Yeah. Anyway, just little things moving forward one by
Little
one.
things.
Life more beautiful.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, thank you, everyone. That's been awesome. And now you can go get some sleep, girls. And certainly Nicola and Cheryl, I'll see you Monday morning, bright and early. My time, my time. Cool. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Yeah, you too. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.